Shoppers may have had it with the post-Thanksgiving rush to the stores. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Despite an avalanche of advertising, a new retail survey finds that so-called Black Friday shopping was probably down this year. The National Retail Federation calculates that only 133 million people shopped in stores and online over the four-day Thanksgiving holiday. That's down more than 5% from last year. Earlier sales, some as early as Halloween, may be at work. Also, many people are still hurting despite the economic recovery. Remember, this is the season the largest private employer in America, Walmart, announced it's cutting health care coverage for part-time workers. Today is known as Cyber Monday, when online sales are supposed to spike. We already missed Small Business Saturday, Giving Tuesdays tomorrow, and Green Mondays in a week. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
Retail analysts predict we'll spend 15% more shopping online today than we did on Cyber Monday last year. Analyst Patty Edwards at U.S. Bank.
Shopping over this weekend, whether Thursday, Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, you're doing it for the sport more than you're doing it for the prices.
Edwards says since we can instantly compare prices online and find better deals, the point of these special shopping days is the ritual team effort. Mothers, daughters, aunties, coworkers working together to score. But the sport, she thinks it's tiring consumers out.
Because there are so many different choices. The whole idea is actually getting diluted.
28-year-old Jessica Harper says the whole go out and shop with everyone else thing doesn't grab her generation, except maybe Small Business Saturday.
I think that it's becoming a little bit more trendy to, you know, shop local.
20-somethings are expected to spend the least of any age group through today. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Delegates from around the world are meeting in Peru's capital, Lima, for 2 weeks of UN negotiations on climate change. The aim is big cuts in greenhouse gas emissions to be finalized in Paris next year. Here's the BBC's environment correspondent, Matt McGrath.
The mood among the delegates from the 195 countries meeting in Peru is likely to be very positive after a raft of recent developments have pushed climate change back up the political agenda. Millions of people took to the streets of the world's major cities in September to demand a new approach to tackling the problem. The US, China and the European Union have all agreed on future curbs on carbon. But there are formidable challenges ahead for the negotiators in Lima. Not only will they have to thrash out a final negotiating text for the deal in Paris, they will also have to agree a common format on climate commitments that would allow a valid comparison between different countries' efforts.
Matt McGrath from the BBC there. Now let's do the numbers. The FT 100 in London is down 1%. Dow, S&P and NASDAQ futures are suggesting a down opening on Wall Street. With oil prices plummeting again, Russia's currency is down nearly 5% to the dollar this morning, conjuring bad memories of Russia's 1998 currency crisis. Among the definitions of gentrification, when new people move into a working-class neighborhood, often with more money at their disposal, this can transform a place for the better and for the worse. This week, my colleagues on the Wealth and Poverty Beat here at Marketplace are exploring some of the economic forces behind gentrification. It's part of a long-term project we plan to pursue this year into next, and here with more is one of our Wealth and Poverty correspondents, Chrissy Clark. Hello, Chrissy.
Good morning, David.
All right, why dive into this particular topic now?
Well, the word gentrification was actually coined 50 years ago this year by a British sociologist named Ruth Glass. She was writing about working class neighborhoods in London, where she noticed, quote, shabby, modest mews and cottages were being turned into elegant, expensive residences by new arrivals. And that pattern is familiar right here in the U.S. today. But the thing is that the conversation around gentrification has become so polarized. Is it good? Is it bad? What doesn't get as much focus is why is this happening and all the business and economic forces at the root of it.
All right. So a worthy topic. But how are you going to approach this? I've been actually watching your preparations here over the weeks. But tell the world, what are you going to do?
OK, so we took an unconventional approach. We wanted to zoom up close into one neighborhood to see how it was changing. We thought, let's become neighbors with that neighborhood and with the people that are there. So we rented a little office space in L.A., a place called Highland Park. And we've been reporting out of there for the last few months.
It's been 10 years since I lived in L.A. Highland Park was not a fancy neighborhood when I left.
Yeah, so for many decades, it's been a mostly Latino, working-class neighborhood, until recently when more white and more affluent professionals started moving in. And so we've talked to many, many of our neighbors, old and new, about all this change. And one of the interesting things that comes up is affordability. A lot of the people who moved here recently came because they'd been priced out of other neighborhoods, and then they found great deals here after the housing crash, like this guy, Harvey Slater.
So I thought I would never be able to buy a house in my own hometown, which is kind of a drag. And then everything crashed, and I started to get an idea, thinking, gee, maybe I can buy a house now. I started looking, and we found this great old house that's abandoned.
Yet, of course, part of why the housing market heated up so fast in Highland Park is that investors and professional flippers started to capitalize on that trend that Harvey's talking about and accelerate it.
Yet soon, some longtime residents found themselves being priced out of their own neighborhood.
Exactly. And so you hear from people like this woman, Jackie Martinez, who grew up here in Highland Park, tried to buy a house across the street from where her parents live.
But someone outright was like, oh, here, cash. And I was like, people around here growing up here can't do that. You know, that's the hard part, I think.
And so this week we'll be looking at all the people who are part of this process, from individual homeowners to multi-million dollar businesses.
A lot of this on the radio, a lot of this online. York and Fig for Figueroa are the key words if you want to check for it online. Marketplace's wealth and poverty reporter Chrissy Clark, thank you.
Thank you.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.